We're back.
Britney Spears is pregnant.
She is pregnant. Listen, she said three things, three very important things during that court thing that was leaked to all of us many, many months ago last summer.
Her
testimony. I want to drive my own car. I want to marry my boyfriend. I want to have a baby.
And
she's doing all of it.
Girlies, it's all happening.
Mistakes.
Ow.
The universe knows that when it gives us something, it has to also take something.
Yes.
And the very same day Britney Spears announced she's pregnant, Tish Cyrus filed for divorce against Billy Ray Cyrus.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
The American royals are, it's a chaotic day for them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to get some great songs from Noah about it, I bet.
Oh, I bet. I bet Miley's like, cool, I don't care.
Yeah.
Well, it's like their second divorce. They've already been divorced.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. They broke up when Miley was like a teenager.
I mean, I didn't even realize they were married. I don't know that much about her parents. Just Miley's the only one I really focus on. I love that we have successfully Miley-pilled so many of our friends.
Yeah.
One of our friends was talking to me about her new album at Carrie and how she has the best voice out there right now. Our other friend has been talking about how great she is, who didn't really think that she was that great until the afters at your apartment.
We've Miley-pilled people so hard that I get texts from those people that I've Miley-pilled that they have Miley-pilled their friends.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm in a multi-level marketing scheme.
Miley Cyrus, come on the pod.
For just promoting Miley Cyrus.
Miley, we love you.
Miley, we fucking worship the ground you walk on. You do so much for deeply annoying women.
Seriously. Deeply annoying, crazy, crazy women.
That are better off not in relationships. Yes. And just getting their bag and being creative.
Yes.
Yeah, she is the aspiring spinster that we all needed.
Yes, she's the Joe March of our time.
Yes. oh my God. Wait, so then who is Noah?
I don't know.
Noah is Amy.
Yeah, Noah is Amy.
And then Brandy is Meg. And then, is that her name, Meg?
Yeah.
And then Trey Cyrus.
Is Beth.
Is Beth.
yeah.
Shake, 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 a shake it.
The choke called that song had on us when it came out. That song is timeless.
That song... I just also love like that he was like trying to be hardcore and like be accepted by the like punk community.
Yeah, that song was like a Zoomies dressing room song.
And he like it featured his little sister who was currently Hannah Montana in that music video.
Oh my God. Great song though. Oh my God. I miss that song.
Yeah, I mean, I miss Metro Station. Come back, Trey Cyrus.
Come back. We miss you.
And then they also have one other sibling. Like I would say that the hierarchy of fame goes Miley, Trace for a certain generation, Noah for a different generation. Yeah. Like they're interchangeable depending on how old you are. And then Brandy is just kind of like, she's not famous, but if you're like keeping up with the Cyruses, she's got a podcast, she's a DJ, she's visible, you know? But then I think his name is Brayden. They just have a rogue brother who just like, he released one song, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. And then he just lives on a farm with his wife and kids now.
That's so hot.
And both Miley and Noah say that he's the most talented member of the family and he just doesn't care to like cash in on it.
He's just
like happy with his like farm animals and chilling.
I really love that. I love people who don't want to cash in on their talent. That's a big part of Oh Beautiful World, or Beautiful World, Where Are You? Which I'm reading. Sally Rooney, one of the main characters, keeps talking throughout this book about how angry she is that as an author, she also needs to have this public image and celebrity to sell her books.
Ugh, yes.
And she keeps going on, like, it's her writing emails to her other friend, and in all the emails she keeps talking about how it's like, you know, she's like, I want to write books. I don't care about being famous. And anyone who wants to be famous is mentally ill. And I hate that we live in a society where we have to cash in on the things that we love, because then you cash in on it and then the money is gone. And then you have to find another talent to cash in on. And it's just like, it makes you hate things.
Period.
That's how I feel about stand up.
Yeah, that's how I feel about this podcast.
Yeah.
I don't hate the podcast, obviously, but I'm like, I wish that we could make like a living off of this podcast with just like a listenership that is just the listenership we have.
Yeah. I started taking a step back from stand up for the reason that I was like, I started doing stand up because I love being on stage and I like enjoy making people laugh. But as soon as the hustle became the main component of it,
and the publicity of it,
I was like, oh, I'm good. I'm good. And I still feel that way. I mean, it's why I've like made my socials private in a way. I just like made all of my Instagram likes like on, can't see them anymore.
Yeah.
Cause I'm like, I don't want to, I'm never going to not be on social media probably. But so all I can do is alter my relationship with it. And I don't want my relationship with social media and the things I love to be about how, you know, trying to get clout for access to other opportunities. It's like, that's miserable.
Yeah.
It makes me miserable.
No, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I give a shit about social media at the level that I do is because, like, this podcast, my OnlyFans, stand-up, and my writing all, like, benefit from a social media presence. Yeah. And, like, that's bullshit that's even the case.
Yeah, well, it's frustrating. It is frustrating. I'll eventually not be private at some point, I'm sure. I mean, but, like,
take your time. Do what you need
to
do.
For now, I'm like, I need a long break. It's like... Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm like, you have the following for both of us. I'm going to stay at 7,000 something followers probably forever. I'm never reaching 10K.
It doesn't look like I'm budging from 14K anytime soon, but we'll see.
I lost 30 followers and went private. I was like, it's time.
Get out and stay out.
Yeah. The doors are locked.
You're enacting the Australian lock-in laws. After, if you are not already in the club, you're not getting in, darling.
Yep. Sorry. Yeah.
But those of you who are in can party till 6 a.m.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. You know? So for everyone, I'm sure you've been listening to us talk about how we're going away for 2 weeks. Part of that 2 week trip is that we're really not going to be on our phones because we're going to be in the woods. In the mountains, somewhere in this great, beautiful country. The kind of like culture of where we're going on this trip is very like, don't be on your phones. People will be on their phones. I will not be the entire time because I have Boost Mobile. And if I go into certain parts of Brooklyn, I lose service.
So
I will not.
The deep woods of Tennessee are not.
Not going to happen. And I cannot wait. To not be on my phone.
Yeah, same.
For 8 days.
Yeah.
Are we there longer than that?
No, we're there for 8 days.
8 days.
And then the trip in total is 14 days.
Yeah, but 8 days.
But we're going to definitely be on our phones on the other parts of the trip for sure.
But 8 days of not being on my phone.
Yeah, I think I'm going to check my phone the day that we release whatever episode is like supposed to come out just to make sure that Elisa is able to post it without any like bumps in the road.
Totally.
But, other than that, I'm going to try to not look at my phone. I kind of want to be able to like use my phone for like pictures and videos every once in a while.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be using my phone for things that don't require the internet. It'll be on airplane mode. Yeah. Like I'll be using my phone to set an alarm because I want to wake up early on certain days.
Yeah, totally.
But other than that, no phone, baby.
Yeah.
I love it. I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Yeah, same. I like how, I mean, truly the second it sounds like we've gotten back into a routine in New York.
I know.
We're like, so we're going on a trip. That's so unlike us. I mean, just rest assured, whenever May 1st is coming up, we will be going on a trip because that's Beltane and we... We're in a cult, so we have to go to the woods.
Listen, the way to keep up a routine is to go on many little trips.
Yeah.
So you don't grow tired of your routine.
Yeah,
that works for us.
It does work. I mean, yeah, it does work for
us. It does work for us.
I know it does. Well, yeah, I mean, it in different ways it works and doesn't work.
Yeah.
But it is my preference on how I live.
It's my preference too.
I like to, you know... Retire as I live.
Yes.
I go on little mini retirements.
Same.
Every 2 months, basically.
Yeah.
And then during the summer, every 2 weeks.
Yeah. I can't wait. I was going to say that we didn't do as many trips this winter, but we literally both went to Mexico.
No, we both went to Mexico.
Actually, we upped the ante because we left the literal country. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, and last year, the summer was jump-started by our Beltane trip. So it's like about to get... The whirlwind is beginning on this trip, but...
It's crazy. I can't wait. Oh my God, the episodes you're going to get, y'all, when we
come back. I think that we should record... at least one of our episodes from the road.
Yeah. No, I agree. I was going to talk to you about that.
Yeah. So that's what we did last year too, is we recorded,
our Dollywood episode. Yeah.
It's not really even, you know, it's the episode we recorded the morning before we went to Dollywood. So we didn't even yet know the magic that we were about to encounter.
But we do this year.
Can't wait to be back in Dollywood.
What if she's there? She goes sometimes.
I know she does go sometimes.
Oh my God, Dolly.
Dolly.
Dolly, we're wearing our cowboy boots and cowboy hats.
Yeah, I'm like dangerously close to ordering a somewhat expensive like fringe outfit just to wear to Dollywood.
I hear you. I am glad that I am on the budget I'm on, because otherwise I would do the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on a budget. I'm just ignoring it.
I want to have this budget so that I'm not worried about money while we're there.
Yeah.
For when I come back.
Totally. Totally. And same, but I'm also, my impulse control gets worse when I'm like more depressed.
I hear you.
And I've been very depressed. You know, I'm on these new meds and like I can feel in some ways that they're working, but I definitely feel... the increased suicidal thoughts that can happen from like Wellbutrin. Either that or I'm just naturally more suicidal than ever. Don't worry, everyone. I don't want to actually do it. But I'm like just in, it's more of a like, I have a lot more thoughts about how fleeting and pointless life is. And so one of my go-to distractions and like immediate dopamine hits has been online shopping.
Yeah, I hear ya.
But specifically for this trip. So not just for no reason, but I'm also like, you have plenty of shit. Like, stop.
That's why I'm starting to pack now, because I'm like, I know that I have stuff that I don't need to buy, or it's working out for me in ways like, I was gonna spend money that I didn't have on one of my looks for this trip, and exactly what I was looking for that I would have spent $80 I shouldn't spend. Charlene gave me at Carrie.
Yeah, you manifested that shit.
Yeah. So
You very the secreted that.
Yeah, I did. I was like, oh my God, down to the exact color scheme that I'm trying to do.
Iconic.
Thank you, Char.
Yeah.
A goddess giving me my goddess look.
Absolutely. I mean, it works out perfectly. We are birthing that Venus.
We are birthing that Venus. Yeah, everyone, that is my Beltane nighttime look, because me and Anya are annoying and we're doing three
Beltane looks. Beltane Eve, Beltane Day, and Beltane Night.
Mind you, we will not be the only ones.
Oh, no. So. In fact, we probably have less looks than half the people
probably.
There. Like, we're really we're downplaying the Beltane outfit changes.
Yeah.
But Beltane Eve, we're doing like demon/devil/ like succubus vibes. Beltane Day, during the day, we're doing like fairy angels. Like, you know, flower child. And Beltane Night, we're doing gods and goddesses. Yes. And Nika's doing Birth of Venus. I'm doing Persephone.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I know that. Can't wait. I almost named myself Persephone, y'all. Can you imagine? That was number three on my list. Ew. Gross.
Yeah, what would we like call you Steffi. For short? Okay.
I thought about that. Well, because I tweeted about it and I was like, what would people have called me? But there's thank God, because not that I know these girls, but there's two different trans girl Steffis in Brooklyn. In this scene.
Oh, really? Yeah, actually, I have heard that name.
Yeah. So I'm like that, you know, I love that I'm the only Nika.
Yeah,
that
totally.
I know. It was Sybil, Nika, Persephone.
Damn.
Yeah.
Thank
God. Sybil would have been hot. But I don't even know what Sib, like Sibby, what would people have called me for a nickname? I don't know.
You just also, you just are Nika.
No, I know. No, when I said it, I was like, oh yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Sybil, famously because of Downton Abbey. I'm first and foremost a faggot.
And God bless you for that.
Yeah. Speaking of faggot, I got tranny tattooed on my arm. To add to my collection of slurs
tattooed to your body.
Yes, I famously have faggot tattooed where my hip meets my stomach and a heart. I got tranny on my left arm, teen idol. I just love putting words on my body.
Yeah.
The next one is going to be a butterfly.
Okay.
That's what I'm doing next. I don't know where. I think probably a tramp stamp.
Next word should be cunt.
Yes. Yes. I don't know where I'll put that. But
on your ass cheek.
Yeah. Or maybe on this hip leading down to my actual cunt.
Mm, with like an arrow.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I love word tattoos. They're really fun.
Yeah, I have a few words tattooed on me, but at some point some tattoo artist said something about word tattoos that like for some reason made me stop getting them. And I
people
need
talk
to get
a lot of shit about word tattoos. I always a lot of like people who are really like into tattoos always make fun of me for having word tattoos. I often have people, one of our friends recently was like, I love the tranny tattoo, but you should stop getting small tattoos in places that you're going to want to get like big pieces one day. And I'm like, I don't want to get big pieces one
day. Yeah, shut up.
Mind your business.
Mind your business.
And also like, I know what I want.
Yeah.
And I like word tattoos.
Yeah.
If I were a tattoo snob, I wouldn't get tattoos like at a house party in Connecticut. Or, like I've literally never got a single tattoo
In a tattoo studio.
Yeah. They've all been done by tattoo artists of varying degrees.
Yeah.
But they've all been in places.
Very casual settings.
Very casual, weird, sometimes weird, the woods settings. So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, tattoo snobs are interesting because it's like, listen, the whole thing that's dope about tattoos is that humans have been getting them for centuries for all kinds of different reasons. And all of them like tell a story.
Yeah.
And so which story they tell doesn't have to be the way that you would tell a story. Yeah. Like tell your own fucking story.
Also,
bitch.
I'm never going to be someone business. Who drops like thousands of dollars on a tattoo or even like hundreds of dollars on a tattoo. So I'm never getting a big piece.
Yeah.
Like every tattoo I've gotten besides the one on my wrist has been free.
Interesting.
I've never paid for a tattoo that I've gotten.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
Yep.
You know, I'm definitely a money spender with tattoos.
And I love that.
I'm going to probably spend a lot of money very soon on a tattoo, but I'm pretty, like, I'm not precious about tattoos. Obviously, if anyone's ever looked at my arm, it's like not like, it was not planned the way that it's turned out so far. So I don't. Yeah, I'm not precious about it, but I do appreciate a good work of art here and there. So I'm down to spend. I'm down to, you know, throw the cash at that. Yeah. But it's not because I like don't like word tattoos done under a swinging lamp. You know.
Yeah. Totally.
I have all the respect in the world for all of it, and I have several tattoos also that were in weird settings.
Yeah,
and for free. But yeah, anyway, love your new tattoo.
Thank you.
Congrats.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Congrats on getting that tattoo in the setting that you got it in.
I know. Yeah. For anyone wondering, it was at a very, very, very expensive Airbnb, like this 80s house that had a separate wing with a sauna and an in-ground pool in it inside.
In the house?
In the house in Waterford, Connecticut, outside of New London. For my best friend Kat's birthday weekend.
Great. Shall we segment?
Let's segment. Mistakes, keepsakes, and hot
takes. My mistake is that I let my laundry go for way too long. I did not do laundry for like, I want to say a month.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of laundry. I had to walk to and from the laundromat like three times to bring all my laundry to it.
I've been there.
And every time that's happened, it doesn't happen super often, but it has happened before in my life. Every time it happens, I'm like, never again. This is the last time I let it go this long. I'm not letting myself live like this ever again.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the kind of laundry day where I'm wearing my Versace jeans with Crocs, you know, like I had no socks left. So I wasn't going to, and I didn't want to put on sandals because it's not that nice out yet. Mm-hmm. And I just like didn't want to put on my like sneakers without socks. So I just truly walked out of the house with designer denim and Crocs.
I love that.
Which is honestly girl boss of me in many ways. It's like Bushwick girl boss of me. I almost want to do like an outfit of the day on TikTok for my like laundry day outfit of the day. And I have my camo Crocs and my Versace jeans couture.
Yeah.
And my tank top that I've owned since I was 14, or not tank top, crop top that I've owned since I was 14. It's in fact the first crop top I ever owned.
I love.
And I still have it, even though it's pilling and is truly going to fall apart any second now.
Yeah.
Because it's from H&M, so it was not built to last. Mm-hmm. But I've really stretched it out 12 years now.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was my mistake. But my keepsake is that I finally did it.
Hell yeah.
Also, my keepsake is that I went, I like did a full out on the club, out on the town night, like fully sober, and it didn't impact my enjoyment of it at all. Was at the club till 6 a.m. and then at the afters till like well into the afternoon, mm-hmm. watching movies and like cooking breakfast with the besties.
Yeah.
And didn't need a single substance for that to still be my ideal Saturday night. So yeah. Love to know that about myself, but I can't wait for the next carry where I will be high as a kite.
Yeah.
once I've done this little sobriety, month-long sobriety experiment, we're going to be back at it, besties. Don't you worry. And then my hot take. Okay, so I saw this advertisement on my TikTok yesterday that made my blood boil. It was an advertisement that was like, girlies, you don't need to shave your armpits. But like, if you're going to have hairy armpits, you better make sure they're better than your boyfriend's. And then it proceeds, or it like goes on to advertise a like scrub and two serum routine for your hairy armpits to make like your armpits, like your armpit hair, like the best it can be. And all the comments were like, oh, my God, I love this. Like, finally, a company that like doesn't think women need to shave their armpits. Like, this is feminism. And I was like, girlies,
no, it's not.
They're still advertising to you and you alone and not to men that you still need to do something with your body hair that men don't need to do.
Yeah,
it is literally the exact same thing as the hair removal industry. Like, this is not empowerment. This is just still the pink tax in a new, exciting way.
Idiots,
so my hot take is pretty much never be excited about any company ever. That's my hot take.
Agreed.
There are companies that we can appreciate for the jobs that they get done for us. Like the product serves the purpose it's supposed to serve and it makes our life easier or whatever. But like standing a company is never the option.
No.
And like, especially not for like political, like feminist empowerment, because it almost pretty much every company that like advertises in some feminist way is still commodifying the fact that like women have to spend more money on everything.
Yeah.
As like the feminist choice.
Yeah.
It's still capitalism and it's still targeted advertisement at people's like, quote unquote, empowerment. And I'm over it. Over it.
Over it. Time's up.
Time is up.
Me too. I'm over it. That's why time's up. Okay. My mistake. I don't even know how much of a mistake this is, but I, since going to the hospital in last September, I have been having pretty frequent panic attacks. I had panic attacks every once in a while as a kid, but it was never something that affected my life the way it does now.
Mm-hmm.
I also think it's genetic. My mom had panic attacks all throughout my life and hasn't in a few years, but it was like a real disorder. And I think that I now have a panic disorder, which I'm like, great. Add that to the list of my disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so when we were at Carrie, I was hanging out and I did a very, I allegedly did a very fat bump of ketamine.
Allegedly.
Not realizing how big it was because it was like dark and I was already high and I was like fumbling for my keys, like sitting on the couch. And I, as I did it, I was like, I thought to myself, like, I can't really see how big this is, but it was big enough that it put me into a pretty deep K-hole. And then while, as I like entered the K-hole, I felt like a pain in my chest that was probably just like my tit being sore or like my breastbone hurting, like my nothing that was like to do with my heart, but I didn't know that in that moment. And had like truly the scariest panic attack I've had since I've started having regular panic attacks. Like I thought that I was dying. And then I was like, thought that I was like dying and was freaking out and was like, I think that I'm like having a heart attack right now. And then obviously that wasn't the case. And I was like, my mom told me, because I told her that I've been having these panic attacks and asked for advice. And this happened when I was in Mexico, where I thought that I was having the heart problem again while I was having a panic attack. Mm-hmm. My mom was like, well, something that you should do is that like when that happens, just say to yourself, like, listen, this probably isn't happening, but even if it is happening, like, what can I do about it right now? It's already happening. And so I just started saying that. I was like, listen, girl, like, you're probably not dying right now, but even if you are, like, what do you want to do about that? Because you're at the club. So, like, what's your game plan? Mm-hmm. And so that kind of talked me off the ledge, but then I was still freaking out. And I eventually got through it. Like, one of our friends saw me kind of panicking by the bar and came and stood with me. And I was like, go back to the dance floor. Like, I don't want you to be in the position of taking care of me at the club right now. Just go do your thing. So they did. And then I found our like best friends, and because I had texted them, found them, and they, you know, hugged me through it while I came out of it. But the mistake aspect is just like, I was so embarrassed by it. And I like, it put me in like a spiral for like an hour and a half at Carrie, where I was like, oh no, like I'm that girl again. Like this just keeps happening where I'm that girl. Like I'm the girl who was like throwing up at Somos. And then I was the girl who was throwing up at your birthday party. And now I'm the girl who was having a panic attack at the club. And then it didn't last for long, because then I was like, nobody cares. Like, nobody cares that I threw up in Somos, and nobody cares that I threw up at the house party, and nobody cares that I had a panic attack tonight, because somebody is probably G-ing out on the dance floor right now, and like somebody's probably throwing up in the bed. Like, no one gives a shit. No. Unless you're really putting...
When I entered Carrie on Saturday, Carrie Nation, there was a girl that was just vomiting into the trash can in front of the, like, where you pay to get in.
That's funny.
And Elisa, the door girl, and also friend of the pod, was like, just like, can someone please like hold her hair back? Aww. Like, and like somebody give me her wallet. Like, I'm going to make sure, I'm going to just look for her coat check ticket. And like Elisa was like going through her wallet. Like, we got to get her in a car like soon. And it was just like so funny that like nobody was like judging her. They were just like, what's the game plan to get this girl out of the club right now and like home?
Yeah.
But it was funny to like be entering the party with a girl just puking her little brains out into the trash can.
Yeah. Yeah, no one cares. So that was like nice to realize, but it was very scary. I like need to go get myself medicated for anxiety, because these panic attacks are not going to go away. What was really funny though is that one of our friends showed up and I saw her and she was like, how are you? And I was like, I'm just coming out of this K-hole and panic attack. So I'm like kind of on the fritz, but I'll be fine in about 10 minutes. And she was like, do you want these like natural anti-anxiety pills that I have on me? And I was like, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say no to that. And she was like, great. Yeah, I found them at Anya's party. Like someone left that my mom bought me. Yeah. She was like, somebody left them out. And I was like, oh, those are mine. And I was like, that's so funny that in this moment, my mom is coming through to help, because I was almost called my mom at the club. I was like, I need to call someone right now.
They literally your pills? Like she took it from the party?
She took it from the bottle, because I left them out and had been telling people like, take these.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I had given them to her when she was coming down from Mali, and I was like, take as many as you want.
That's so funny.
So yeah, they were just in her bag.
Oh.
And I was like that. And she was like, oh, wow, like, look at your mom's magic coming through. Which That's they did beautiful. Help. Because then for the rest of the night, I was fine. So I was like, let's just go dance and chill. My keepsake, though, I guess also would be part of Saturday. I was like really depressed. Or I mean, I'm still depressed, but I was like very depressed. Not this weekend, but last weekend, last time we recorded. And was feeling like I needed a break from...
Go ahead, sorry.
Like, I needed a break from our social life and from our friends, and not because I didn't want to be around our friends, but because I was feeling really disconnected from everyone, and I was, like, beginning to... I could, like, feel myself getting to a place of, like, beginning to not be my best self in social situations if I kept going out the way that I was. And so I took, like, a little break this week, I would say, and then I went out to Carrie, and the whole night was amazing. I felt very happy all night besides that one snafu, and just found myself feeling very connected to everyone. And there was this, like, moment where I was dancing, and it was me and Char and two other trans girls, and I was like, I love this so much that, like, this is my life, and all I needed was, like, less than a 24-hour break hanging out somewhere else to remember how much I love my life and my friends. So that was nice.
Mm-hmm.
I love our life. And my hot take is that I don't even know why this needs to be said, but if people are not tweeting about something, it's not that they don't care. I saw someone that I really like and respect tweet today, so I don't want to, like, pile on them, but I saw them tweet about how, like, none of their cis friends have been tweeting about all of, like, the anti, like, trans bills that are coming out, and how she's only seen them tweet about the don't say gay bill. And I can imagine being frustrated by that. I'm, like, lucky that none of my friends are really tweeting about either. But I just think it's, like, really weird when any, like, marginalized group of people, but I'll keep it to trans people, because that's who I am, and that's what this was about, like, link perceived, like, support from their cis friends of, like, trans rights and trans lives and trans safety to how much they're tweeting or, like, posting on Instagram about these things. It just, like, feels weird. I'm like, I don't need, I guess I'm just lucky that, like, I know that my cis queer friends love and are there for me and support me and support the trans people in their lives because they show that through their actions.
Yeah.
But it's like, I think people need to, like, free themselves from that way of thinking.
We don't all need to give, like, a public statement on every issue.
And it's not helpful anyway, because no. it's like people tweeting in, like, Chicago or New York City about their, like, hatred, or not their hatred, but about, you know, their support for trans people and their, like, distaste for transphobes is not doing anything for someone in Alabama or someone in Idaho or someone in Utah or someone in Texas, like, where all these bills are being passed. So it's like, who's that for anyway?
Yeah.
And also, it's like, all of these bills that are being passed, I mean, listen, I'm sure in, like, a month they're going to start passing bills that are fucking over trans adults, but, like, this person's a trans adult and I'm a trans adult. All these bills are affecting trans youth anyway, so it's like, it does nothing for me for anyone to be up in arms online and that I'm friends with to be tweeting about these bills, because it doesn't make me feel like these bills are not directly impacting my life in any way other than making me feel sad for trans kids and trans teenagers and making me a little bit paranoid about, like, where rights are heading.
Yeah.
But also not even, because it's like, I live in New York, and so I don't really see anything happening in New York anytime soon. So it's like, I don't even think that would make me feel any better if people were tweeting about any, you know, these bills. It's just, I don't really get it.
Well, I guess there's something to be said about, like, just because you and I live in, like, a little bit of a bubble and echo chamber, a lot of people's cis friends especially have, like, other cis friends that are just, like, not knowledgeable about any of this and, like, don't necessarily know what a, like, crisis it actually is.
Yeah.
So, like, I do see an argument for, like, urging your, like, the friends of yours that have access to other people that, like, could care but don't care yet, like, encouraging them to, like, care, which I think is more the argument than it is, like, because it, to make anybody feel better.
Well, no, I mean, their argument was that it, like, make they feel not supported as a trans person, that their cis friends are not talking about this.
Right.
Also, I, like, this person hangs out with queer cis people. So it's like, your queer cis friends do care about trans people. I've seen, like, we've been in similar spaces.
Yeah.
We're, like, kind of in the same subculture. So I get it to an extent. I just think, like, I don't know. I see these tweets all the time from trans people, and it's weird. I'm like, you know, it happened last month when one of these bills were passed where trans people were like, none of my cis friends checked in on me this week. And it's like, you're like a 28-year-old, not this person, but like, I'm like, for this person that was tweeting last month, I'm like, you're like a 28-year-old trans woman. Like, why do your cis friends need to check in on you about a bill that was just passed banning 14-year-olds from getting trans-affirming healthcare? Mm-hmm. Like, I just, it's a little bit like main character syndrome to me sometimes. And I think that, I don't know. I just, I see both sides. I get it. I think cis people should obviously care about this shit, but.
Yeah, I mean, the majority of the, like, real work that cis people can do is, like, talking to their families about these things. It's like, the outreach is probably not going to happen via tweet Twitter. Or infographic.
Yeah, or, like, giving people money. Like, go donate to organizations or really directly to trans people.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, like, my friends that aren't, like, retweeting shit on Twitter are the people who I know are, like, throwing hundreds of dollars at, like, GoFundMes when, like, they pop up if they have the means to do so. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I think this person is a really, really cool person. So I'm not even like coming for them. It's just, I saw that and that made me think of this because it's such like it's a statement that I constantly see reverberating through trans Twitter. And it often is from other white trans people. I don't ever really see, honestly, I never see black trans people tweeting that way. It's always white trans women.
Mm.
So I think there's something to be said there that I'll unpack later with myself, but I'm just like, I don't really, again, it feels, I think because it comes from white trans people all the time, it does feel like main character syndrome a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I mean, there is kind of, regardless of like trans identity, white marginalized people of any kind like to really cling on to like their marginalization.
Yeah.
Categories that they do have.
Yeah. There's been a lot of mess on trans Twitter this week from white trans girls, and I've just been like, everyone kind of needs to calm down and take a step back, maybe log off Twitter for a minute, don't tweet about trans stuff. I don't know, like, chill out.
Yeah, I mean, Twitter isn't necessarily the front lines of this fight.
Yeah. That's it.
It's definitely at a boiling point, Twitter is at the moment.
Yeah, like, I'm really hoping that it's going to die soon the way like Facebook has and MySpace did.
Yeah. What do we think the fuck up of the week is? Fuck up of the week.
Have you been following the election in France?
No, not really.
It was Macron, who's the current, or Macaroon, whatever the fuck his last name is, the like Pete Buttigieg, Joe Biden of France, who's currently the president. It was him up against a leftist candidate, up against a right-wing candidate, and the right-wing candidate, it's looking like she's going to win. There's a second round of the election that has to happen, but pretty scary. She's like Trump, like as bad as Trump.
Yeah.
I've been following her shit for a few years. Le Pen is her name, last name. And the leftist candidate came really, really, really close, but is definitely not going to make it. And I'm just wondering how much that vote was split by a fucking moderate. Mm. You know, people always say that it's like leftists splitting the vote. And I'm like, it's actually always the moderate.
Yeah.
That is splitting the vote. And then we get a right winger. And then we blame the leftist candidate.
Yep.
But interesting. Love that.
The Trumpification of European politics has been very interesting to me because like Europeans have been like gawking and like laughing at America. And it's like, oh, it's coming for you.
Which is
besties.
So funny because it came for them before it came for us with Brexit.
Yeah.
They love to leave that out. I'm like, y'all had Brexit a year and a half before we
Let's
had
just
Trump.
All agree that like white people are not great at running countries, because that's the commonality here.
Yeah, I saw a tweet that was like, Europe got control of the world yes. and ruined it in 500 years.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck, you're right.
Yeah.
500 years. Took 500 years to ruin a however billions years old planet.
That's what hustle culture brought us. That's what the grind brought us.
That's what the girl bossification of the planet.
The girl bossification of colonizing the planet and capitalizing on human suffering and exploitation.
I should like be by a stream right now, like braiding my hair and collecting rocks that I'm putting into a basket that I'm not.
I should be singing on a cliff into the ocean and luring sailors to, I don't know, what do they do? Eat them?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I should be doing.
Yeah. I should be swan diving off of a cliff into the water right now, like Pocahontas in the Disney Pocahontas. Those cliffs that famously exist in Flatlands, Virginia. It's one of my favorite reviews of that movie.
Yeah,
it's a scathing review from this indigenous movie critic who was like, by the way, when did Virginia get cliffs? And when did indigenous people start being able to climb up trees like spider monkeys?
Also, when has anyone been able to just like pick up a cub in front of the mother bear without getting absolutely slaughtered on site?
Yeah, who is going to volunteer to be my... It's going to be someone who weighs less than me because I'm weak. Be my pug. My baby cub when I sing Colors of the Wind on our trip.
You know?
I'll find someone.
This is an open call.
I'm going to send a group text. Hey, if everyone could stop eating.
Who wants to be scooped up for my internal music video?
Listener mistakes.
So let's do a listener mistake.
Okay. Hi, besties. Love the pod. So the year is 2018, and long story short, me and my toxic narcissist girlfriend break up and I kick her out of our shared apartment, so I have to somehow find $1,500 more than usual just to cover rent for that month. Yikes.
Yeah.
I'm working with an agency as a full service sex worker at the time and barely covering rent on a good month. I get offered a date with a client that I've worked with in the past who I don't like because he's a super MAGA misogynist. And because he's really into tit fucking and coming on my face, which is pretty inconvenient and degrading just in general. I take the date because I really need the money, but two hours before I start slamming wine because I just cannot deal with this obnoxious misogynistic John sober. I go to his place completely blackout and complete the service, but because I am so fucked up, I forget to grab the envelope of cash off of the nightstand. Oh, no. So next morning, I wake up hungover as fuck to a bunch of texts from my agency about their cut. So basically, due to my fuck up, I ended up having to pay $250 to let this disgusting client titty fuck me. Oh, my God. That's like traumatic.
Oh, my God.
Oof. Moral of the story, stay sober if you need to remember to collect money and never let an insurrectionist titty fuck you because it's just not worth it.
Oh. Oh my God. Bestie. Oh. That has to be, I think that is out of all the listener mistakes, the one that hurts me.
That's like a Hall of Fame.
The most. That is a Hall of Fame mistake.
Oh, wow.
There are so many layers
to
how upsetting that is.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry that happened. That's like truly terrible.
Anyone who thinks sex work is not real work, listen to that story.
Yeah, just over and over and over.
Tell me that isn't
right back in, or we follow each other on Twitter, I think. Your name is familiar. So DM me because I want to know more. I follow up questions. Like, did you reach out to him?
Did you try to get it and like he just was an asshole and just didn't respond?
That's really the only follow-up question I have, actually. I don't have multiple.
Yeah.
But I need to know about that.
Yeah, because like, wouldn't that make him just like unable to go through this agency ever again?
Yeah.
If he like never paid?
Yeah. Like, or did you just not want to tell the agency that that had happened because you didn't want to get fired from the agency?
Interesting.
But that's, I'm wondering if you still reached out to him, or maybe not, because then he could have complained to the, you know, who knows?
Who knows? Yeah. Damn.
DM us.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah. Thank you for that radical vulnerability. Thank you for that radical honesty.
Our hearts go out to you.
Yeah.
And I hope that you're in a very different financial position now.
Same. All right. Well,
may you be blessed with abundance.
May you be blessed with abundance.
And not an abundance of,
come on your tits from an insurrectionist.
Come on your tits from an insurrectionist. Okay.
More sex work related mistakes. Yes, it makes me feel like we're on Call Her Daddy or something.
I know. I mean, it is like, I just love knowing that.
My mistake is sex work. No,
yeah. The real mistake here is that you ever lowered yourself to that.
My
JK,
best mistake was
obviously
letting Anya brainwash
Don't
me
you fucking dare
into
even
going
go
on OnlyFans during the pandemic.
Oh my God.
That's that. That's when I should have known that she was amazing. <Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da we won't, because I'll murder suicide us first, allegedly. If we ever stop being friends, I'll pivot hard to being a swerf.
See, that like jokes like that make me worried, because you tell stories about like you actually being very vindictive to old friends, and I'm like, is Nika going to hardcore ruin my life?
No, I haven't.
If we stop being friends,
I have been vindictive and ruined the lives of like exes, boys.
Yeah, but like at this point, I feel not like friends. I've earned the same status.
The fact that we have not fought in the 2.5 years that we have, but it's been that long, right?
Yeah,
we're good.
I'm not actually worried, but I'm just like, you know, it's in all the different possibilities.
No, I wouldn't, because I see how you handle conflict and you're too level-headed. All of my friends have been as equally insane as I am, so it's been fun to be vindictive, because it's usually been a game of who can one up the other.
Yeah, I know. Whenever people try to be vindictive with me, it's really unsatisfying, because I'm like, I don't take the bait, and I just am like, let's talk this out, and they hate that.
No, I would probably just give you the treatment that I gave the bestie that I had the falling out with that's not a falling out with anymore. I would just like be cold and aloof and ignore you and like talk shit.
All right, let's stop even talking about this hypothetical.
It's stressing Anya out.
I'm upset.
Anya's flushed.
It's like hurting my feelings, even though I'm the one that brought it up. Actually, you're the one that brought it up, but I expanded on it.
Yeah, I brought it up as a joke. You made it a hypothetical.
Well, you know, it's important to talk about these things.
It's important to talk about our fears.
Yeah, I was being vulnerable.
And I appreciate
on
that.
On the pod.
No, if we had a falling out, it would be much like Romy and Michelle's high school reunion. We'd get over it in like 2 hours.
Yeah.
God, you're being so bossy right now. I love it.
Yeah.
Wow. Where's Michelle? Or where's Romy? Oh, we just had a really big falling out like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, we would like have a falling out like at Carrie Nation, and like by the end of Carrie Nation, we'd be stronger than ever.
Yeah,
that's why that party is 8 hours long.
Seriously,
to be able to resolve any conflict by the time the party is over.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of dance floor mediation happens. Yeah, a lot of conflict resolution happens. In like the dark corners.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And like, we're not even
kidding. That's why there's so many couches.
Yeah, all the couches are actually like therapy couches.
Yeah.
They're couples therapy couches for besties and exes and ex-besties alike.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The truth that is actually in that is
no,
so
it's
funny.
It's so true. It really is.
Deep dive. Deep dive.
I like referenced this, but I didn't actually talk about it itself. When I like broke the spirit of a rule in an open relationship I was in.
No.
Like I didn't break the actual rule, but I broke the spirit of the rule. And like, you know, I instead of just like listening. Okay, I'll do it. Okay. So I was in an open relationship when I. The last serious relationship I was in, and my first relationship when I moved to New York City, we were immediately open, or like, you know, within the first month we opened it because we were like cool alternative New Yorkers. And also because by then I knew that monogamy wasn't for me, and I communicated that and he was down, but it was very clear pretty early on that we both were not like as well practiced in non-monogamy, and we definitely had like some jealousies and hangups, and you know, the classic. Anyone who's mm-hmm. even dabbled in non-monogamy knows that it's hard to like deprogram your mind mm-hmm. from the very natural knee-jerk reactions of jealousy and possessiveness and wanting to be picked and be you know, ranked higher than other people, all that. And to be clear, we weren't dating other people, we were just hooking up with other people. And one of our rules was to not hook up with other New York City comedians. And I did talked about this, like I referenced this in another deep dive I did about this relationship, but I didn't talk specifically about what actually happened. Mm-hmm. So we were both comedians. We had a rule to not hook up with other New York City comedians, just because that's like our community and social circle. And it was like too hard for us to like have to be around and socialize with the people that we might be hooking up with, which now I do think it's important to have boundaries and like have rules when you're in an open relationship. But I do think that like if part of your rules are around kind of your own insecurities rather than you like interrogating and tackling those insecurities, mm-hmm. you're probably not in like the best mental and emotional place to be as open as you're being in the first place, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
It does.
So like, I feel like these boundaries were not so much about being like the boundary of not hooking up with other specifically New York City comedians, was not so much about like for the sake of not being too messy or like not, shitting where we eat. It was mm-hmm. like very much so specifically because we were both insecure at the thought of it. Mm-hmm. And I do think that like insecurity is natural and it's going to come up in non-monogamous situations. But when it is the motivation for the rules and boundaries within your non-monogamy, maybe it's time to like tackle mm-hmm. the whole thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So and then we honestly didn't do a lot of check-ins about where we were. I feel like boundaries and feelings around open relationships are something that's kind of always changing and moving, and it's a fluid thing that the communication should be always open about. And we didn't really do that. We had a rule that we had to like tell each other when we hooked up with someone else. So we would like tell each other, but we never really talked about it. And I don't know, there were just like a lot of different dominoes being set up for like as soon as one eventually fell over, it was like mm-hmm. not a great thing. So I ended up hooking up with a comedian that technically lives in New York City, but is like a very famous comedian mm-hmm. that like didn't interact with us socially, was never like on the same shows or in the same social settings mm-hmm. as us. And when I told my ex about it, he was very upset, which is totally fine. But like, he kind of just like kept citing the reason of him being upset as because this is a New York comedian. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, the reason we made this rule, like the reason we stated we made this rule mm-hmm. is because we didn't want to like muddy our social waters, and like we do not socialize with this person. Mm-hmm. So I did break, I like broke the technical on paper rule, but I didn't break the spirit of the rule, in my yeah. opinion. But my mistake was like, obviously that wasn't the issue at hand. Mm-hmm. The issue was that this clearly triggered his insecurity mm-hmm. and triggered like his like any discomfort around like if this were a like healthy, communicative, open relationship, I feel like we would have probably, it wouldn't have been a fight. It would have been like just a, oh, that like sort of feels like you broke that rule. Can we maybe talk about like that not happening again in the future? Or like, you know, me, like I would probably be like way more open to receiving his discomfort with it.
Yeah.
But I instead was very defensive and he was very offensive and it kind of turned into a us, like me versus you scenario rather than us versus the conflict.
Yeah.
And it was all kind of out of pride and out of, on my end, I can't speak for him, but on my end, it was like, I didn't want to admit that I had done something wrong because I like, you know, this is an open relationship and like, I'm not a cheater. And it feels like I was being accused of like cheating. Mm-hmm. And like, that's one of the key components of an open relationship and it being successful is being open to part of the open in the open relationship is being open to your partner's feelings and open to boundaries changing, even if it's happening in real time. And also being open to like hearing that what you did hurt somebody's feelings.
Yeah.
And I sort of felt, you know, like the, like that's the crux of it. The main mistake is I felt like I could argue my way out of his feelings not being hurt anymore.
Yeah.
And like, it doesn't even really matter what the logistics are or if I could like prove in court that I didn't really break the rule or whatever. Like, even if a jury sided with me, the person that I love is upset. And that's like the problem at hand, that I should have been more empathetic to and more like open to resolving the issue rather than winning the issue. And I think that was a pivotal mistake for me to make because it has really informed how I've approached communication and polyamory and non-monogamy ever since then.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you know, you have to kind of make these mistakes to internalize the lessons of them, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, my bad. Also, low-key brag that I hooked up with a very famous comedian.
I love that brag.
Also, just on the topic of just like evolving and self-improvement and all of that, that same famous comedian recently slid into my DMs and I ignored him because I no longer crave validation from powerful or famous or hot people.
Hell yeah. And
that's on progress, bitch.
Well, much like you no longer craving validation from famous people or even fame, really. That's kind of like Miss Amanda Bynes.
Oh my gosh.
Who we're talking about this week on this week's episode of Best Mistakes. And don't worry, everyone, we're not talking about her mental health struggles being a mistake because that's not a mistake. But we are talking about her and what may have led to these mental health struggles that she dealt with in the mid-2000s and the 2010s. We're specifically touching upon Dan Schneider.
Ugh.
And the role that he played at Nickelodeon when he was their years-long producer and his very weird and inappropriate relationship with Amanda Bynes. We're going to get into all of it.
Best mistake.
Obviously, if you're a millennial, you remember Amanda Bynes when she was on Nickelodeon, when she was the star of that network. We all loved Amanda Bynes. She was the comedic, I think she is the comedic voice of our generation.
Mm-hmm.
And so a little bit of backstory on her. From when she was born, people say that she was a natural performer from as soon as she could speak. She was born in Thousand Oaks, California, and at 10 years old, she went to a camp called the Laugh Factory Comedy Camp in Los Angeles, where she was scouted by a Nickelodeon producer. And so this immediately led to her debuting on Nickelodeon. She had been in a few commercials prior to that, but nothing big. And this led to her debut on the sketch show All That, which we all remember watching. It was mm-hmm. like the kids' version of Saturday Night Live, which Amanda Bynes
said. And to be honest, even better.
Even better. And Amanda Bynes said in her Paper Mag interview in 2018, rather, that Saturday Night Live was the show that made her want to be on TV. She remembers being on vacation with her parents and making her mom stay in the hotel room all weekend so that they could watch episodes of Saturday Night Live. And so this was a huge deal for Amanda.
Good for her for making an even better show than right? Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
She really did that.
She did that.
The Amanda Show, infinitely funnier than Saturday Night Live.
Absolutely.
To this day.
To this day. Which, so 3 years later, in 1999, she gets The Amanda Show. And that runs from 1999 to 2002. And she played iconic characters such as Judge Trudy, which was bringing the dancing lobsters at the end of every episode. Amber, who was the popular girl in the girls' room in the bathroom.
It's the girls' room.
Moody's Point, which was supposed to be a spoof on Dawson's Creek with her mom, who she's always talking to, and her mom is missing in a hot air balloon. Playing Courtney, the Maha girl, who had the crazy teeth that kind of looked like dentures. And a lot of the people that worked with her, adults.
Also her own biggest fan.
Yes.
Amanda
yes.
Please.
Yes, yes, yes.
AmandaPlease.com.
Yes, yes, yes. people in the industry compared her to Lucille Ball and Carol Burnett. They said that she was the young version of both of them for her slapstick comedy and also for her work ethic. A lot of the adults that were on The Amanda Show and All That specifically remember her as being somebody that was very professional and fun to work with. And then in the early 2000s, 2002,
which, let's also stop valuing professionalism in children.
We're going to get into it, but great. I agree. absolutely. But this is what was said. So in the early 2000s, she made her transition into movie roles. She starred in 2002 in Big Fat Liar, which was an iconic movie with Frankie Muniz and Paul Giamatti. I remember ordering that 4 times in a row on demand when my cousins were babysitting me, and I got into a lot of trouble, but I couldn't stop watching it. What a Girl Wants in 2003 when she was 17, which iconic movie. Everyone needs to watch that if they haven't. I was obsessed with that movie.
Yeah.
And she continued on to being a comedic star in the mid-2000s. She starred in the hit movie, as we all remember, She's the Man.
Best movie of all time.
Best movie of all time. And needs to be stated that she is the reason that Channing Tatum has his career.
Yeah.
She also says in this Paper Magazine interview, I totally fought for Channing to get cast in that movie because he wasn't famous yet. He'd just done a Mountain Dew commercial, and I was like, this guy's a star. Every girl will love him. But the producers were like, he's so much older than all of you. And I was like, it doesn't matter. Trust me.
It's true.
And it was true. But this is where, like, some of her, she says, some of her, like, insecurities and maybe mental health issues, specifically with, like, dysphoric feelings about her body began to take hold. She said that the movie after it wrapped was an interesting experience. She said, when the movie came out and I saw it, I went into a deep depression for 4 to 6 months because I didn't like how I looked when I was a boy. She pauses and says, I've never told anyone that. Seeing herself with short hair and sideburns, she says, was a super strange, not of body experience, and it really put me into a funk. But she continued making movies. She was in Sydney White in 2007, which is honestly another iconic movie, but it got panned by critics. But, like, it's so funny. Then she was in Hairspray, which she is, you know, Nikki Blonsky is, like, the undisputed star of that movie. It launched her career. She got a Golden Globe. Kind of launched and ended her career because she was never really in anything else again. But Amanda Bynes was also considered the second star of that movie. And she says that it was one of her favorite roles that she was ever in. She was super excited to be in a musical. She had the time of her life. And This is when shit starts getting kind of out of control for her. She says that around the time of Hairspray, she remembers reading an article in a magazine that called Adderall the New Skinny Pill. And they were talking about how women were taking it to stay thin. And she says, I was like, well, I have to get my hands on that. And like many fellow millennials experimenting with Adderall at the time, and honestly, even still, it's like, I think very common for teenagers and college age people to experiment with Adderall, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. She was able to get herself a prescription after she went to a psychiatrist and faked symptoms of ADD. And so that started her addiction, which she says that she had an addiction. This is not me saying that. That started her addiction with Adderall. A few months later, she started working on Easy A, which came out in 2010. While she was working on Easy A, she was also working on Hall Pass, which was going to be her first foray into adult movies. She was supposed to play a babysitter in that movie who gets the main character to cheat on his wife by fucking her. And that is where the like first reports in the media started coming up that suddenly her like good girl image was crumbling and she was becoming hard to work with and weird to work with. She ended up walking away from Hall Pass, and I'm going to get into what happened on the set later. But she said that after walking away from Hall Pass, she remembers attending a screening of her last film, Easy A. And she says, I had a different reaction than everyone else to the movie. She said, I literally couldn't stand my appearance in that movie and I didn't like my performance. I was absolutely convinced that I had to stop acting after seeing it. I was high on marijuana when I saw that, but for some reason, it really started to affect me. I don't know if it was a drug-induced psychosis or what, but it affected my brain in a different way than it affects other people. It absolutely changed my perception of things. And I want to say that, so Amanda ended up being diagnosed a few years later with being bipolar. And, you know, I remember when she did this interview and people were criticizing her and were trying to act as though she was lying and she must have been addicted to cocaine or something else, because weed doesn't do that to people. But weed does cause psychosis, mm-hmm. especially if you have bipolar disorder.
It does, yeah.
And she, to this day, says that weed, her addiction to weed is what fucked her up. Like, for real. Mm-hmm. And that caused psychosis. So I just want to throw that out there because I don't think she's lying about anything. She says that she did Molly a few times and she did coke 3 times, but it never got her high. And that it was Adderall and weed that she feels ruined her career and her perception of things. So in 2010, Amanda announced via Twitter that she was retiring from acting. She said that she saw Easy A, and I was convinced that I should never be on camera again, and I officially retired on Twitter, which was, you know, also stupid. If I was going to retire the right way, I should have done it in a press statement, but I did it on Twitter. So she retired on Twitter in 2010, and naturally, she'd been working from when she was 10 years old, and now she's not working anymore. And she is, what, 27 at this point? So that's a pretty long time. And she says in this Paper Mag interview that after retiring from acting, she found herself feeling really adrift. She quit what had basically been, up until that point, a lifelong pursuit. And she said that I had no purpose in life. I'd been working my whole life and now I was doing nothing. I had a lot of time on my hands and I would wake and bake and literally be stoned all day. Around that time, she said that I started hanging out with a seedier crowd and I isolated a lot. I got really into my drug usage and it became a really dark, sad world for me. She sums up her life back then as one in which she was just stuck at home, getting high, watching TV and tweeting. She's
okay. That's like kind of the life, to be honest. But also sounds like she was experiencing like classic symptoms of burnout.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I mean, because we're so obsessed with productivity, I understand that being like a time that she looks back on and like feels bad about and regrets, but it's like also maybe necessary rest she was taking after working like a fucking workhorse since she was like 12 years old.
Yeah. Agreed.
Maybe she should have rested in a healthier way. And yeah, like
because
not
this was
enabled.
Also when she started.
No, I understand that. But what I mean is just like to regret and feel bad about like that she was
the time
just like
off.
Yes.
Yeah, totally. So she goes on to say that I'm really ashamed and embarrassed with the things I said. I can't turn back time, which we all remember the tweets that she's talking about. I want, you know, some of them were funny. I want Drake to murder my vagina. Some of them were truly heinous, which, you know,
we're not going to repeat.
She tweeted about Rihanna, some crazy shit. But again, clearly like symptoms of some kind of burnout related, mental health related breakdown that she was having. Exasperated by drug use, etc., and not having a support system. She goes on to say, I'm so sorry to whoever I hurt and whoever I lied about because it truly eats away at me. It makes me feel so horrible and sick to my stomach and sad. Everything I worked my whole life to achieve, I kind of ruined it all through Twitter. But, she adds, it's definitely not Twitter's fault. It's my own fault. And she goes on to say in that interview that, you know, she had a harrowing couple of years. She ended up being put into a temporary conservatorship filed by her mother, Lynn.
God, that name is cursed.
And it then became a permanent conservatorship, which ended a few weeks ago after 9 years. And I will get into that later as well. But, you know, she very much would relate, I think, to the way that we talk about mistakes, because she goes on to end that interview saying that as a Southern California kid, her favorite band growing up was the group, was the skatewear line No Fear. And I guess that like one of their, that she related to them because of their notions of bravery and fearlessness. And she says, I think that's how I kind of go about life now. Like, what's there to lose? I have no fear of the future. I've been through the worst and come out the other end and survived it. So I just feel like it's only up from here.
So
which
true, bestie.
Is so true, bestie.
It's interesting, like, that Amanda Bynes, of all people, was able to ruin her career, quote unquote, ruin her career on Twitter. Because of things that she tweeted and said, like, during just a genuine, clear mental health crisis.
Yeah.
Like, we successfully canceled Amanda Bynes, but we can't cancel people who, like, purposefully say hateful shit.
Yeah. I don't really understand
in
it.
Their clear...
I do. It's misogyny.
It is. It's... Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It's always misogyny.
So now I want to get into the Dan Schneider stuff because it's just important. So everything that I'm saying about Dan Schneider is alleged. None of it has been proven. None of it has even been taken to court. The biggest, I guess, admission of any kind of guilt is that, a few years ago, Nickelodeon settled with him on a $7 million kind of non-legal settlement where they paid him $7 million to walk away from Nickelodeon, and he did. Which I think says a lot. Mm. And this was after he got lightly canceled during the Me Too movement. But every star that has come out against him has not mentioned him. But they've all mentioned a producer at Nickelodeon as being abusive. Jeanette McCurdy being the one that has come out the hardest against him. A lot of it has been anonymous. And a lot of the stuff that Amanda Bynes has said has not mentioned his name. But... there is a gossip forum called Crazy Day and Crazy Nights that's run by somebody called Entity Lawyer. He claims to be friends with Amanda. She has been on his podcast. I didn't hear these podcast clips, but I listened to his own TikToks and recollections of her being on his podcast. And he says that he interviewed Amanda a few years ago about Dan Schneider. And there's a video that he shows her and that I watched when she's like 12 years old. She's in a hot tub with Dan Schneider. It's like promo for a Nickelodeon video. He's fully clothed. She's wearing like a one piece, pretty conservative bathing suit, but it's still fucking weird. Mm-hmm. And he says something to the effect of Dan Schneider is creepy. And apparently she says, yeah, I can tell you a lot about him being fat and creepy. And he says to her, you know, like, why do you think he's creepy? Like, what was he like? And he says that she, about 30 or 40 times while he was questioning her about Dan Schneider, kept saying, I need a break. I need a break. I need a break. Mm. And then would start talking about him and then would be like, I'm tired. I want to stop. I'm tired. I want to stop. And that she kept like disconnecting, which a big thing that people have said about Amanda Bynes is that there are TikToks of an interview that she gave that kind of backs up this like disconnection theory that it might be like part of her mental illness. Is that she had this interview in like the mid 2000s where she talks about and then goes through each one, her five different like personalities that she does like when working. And like one of them is like me on set, me in an interview, me landing a deal, me being a bitch so fans leave me alone, me doing this. And like her body language changes, everything changes. Now that could just be her being an amazing actress, because she is, or that she like learned to build up some kind of like defense for herself to be different versions of herself in this industry as like a probably very traumatized child actor.
Mm-hmm. A survival technique.
Yes. So a Twitter page called Obscure Nickelodeon, they allege that a former child actress who was on The Amanda Show came forward anonymously. It's a whole tweet thread and it is all anonymous. And this former child actress says that Dan Schneider would regularly hold Amanda Bynes from behind, like he was her boyfriend on set, and that her parents would stand there and do nothing to stop it, and that Amanda would look uncomfortable. At this point, when the actress is talking about this, Amanda was under the age of 14. This actress also originally got a small role on Unfabulous in 2004. And the reason that she didn't end up taking the role is because during auditions, she said that girls were required to wear spaghetti strap shirts, open toe shoes, and pigtails. And that allegedly, this was all required by Dan Schneider himself. She also says that when she landed that role in Unfabulous, Dan's assistant wanted her to attend a party alone. And when her mom said no, it was insisted that she went alone to meet Dan, and that it was a no-shoe party. And that the assistant asked if there was a problem with her feet being photographed, and that all the girls do it. And that all of the parents then are rewarded with going on their own party that's paid for by Nickelodeon. So the mother said no, this girl didn't get the role. And the anonymous girl said that she tried to speak out about this years ago, but was shut down by Marty Weiss. Now, Marty Weiss was a talent agent at Nickelodeon, who was arrested and charged with child molestation charges in 2011. And when he was charged, anonymous sources came out, I read articles about this, came out and said that no one in the industry was shocked when Marty Weiss was arrested and charged with issues related to child molestation.
If you aren't shocked when it finally comes to a head, why don't you do anything in the fucking meantime?
Yeah, agreed.
Also, if you like watch all the Nickelodeon shows that Dan Schneider worked on, now you like can't help, it's kind of like when you find out Quentin Tarantino has a foot fetish, and yeah, then you can't like you can't watch one of his movies without just seeing the foot stuff,
episodes of iCarly where they take off their shoes for no reason.
Like every single Dan Schneider show, it just has like children's feet involved in like gags and jokes and shit,
yeah,
that like don't need to be part of it and are like innocent enough because it's not technically a sexual part of the body, but like once you know about like the behind the scenes obsession he had with feet, it's like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah. According to this anonymous actress, Amanda was also at this point allegedly binge eating and being forced to take Adderall during this period to get her to work more on set. Like, okay, Judy Garland. But apparently this was happening and people knew about it. And her parents were making her take this Adderall, allegedly. Jeanette McCurdy also had her own abuse allegations surrounding her time at Nickelodeon. She essentially like walked away from Nickelodeon. Some say she was fired. Some say she just quit. But she's talked a lot of shit about Nickelodeon, mm-hmm, on podcasts and interviews, specifically about the trauma of working with an emotionally abusive producer at Nickelodeon who she's never named. But it's assumed that it was Dan Schneider. She also made this really like weird and disturbing Vine when Vine was still a thing after she left Nickelodeon, where she is like very disheveled and wearing like smeared lipstick, and it's her being like, hi Dan, are you watching this Vine, do you like it, look at what you did to me, Dan. And then it ends. It's like really weird. And everyone felt at the time that that was her way of calling him out and exposing him for his abuse.
Jeanette McCurdy is a badass, by the way.
Badass. I can't wait for her memoir to come out. Come on the pod. I can't wait to read your book.
Yeah.
So here is some more alleged shit. Amanda allegedly reached out years ago to Entity Lawyer with a letter signed after Dan Schneider walked away from Nickelodeon. It wasn't signed with a signature, but it was, you know, signed in the email Amanda Bynes that was posted to Entity Lawyer's website. And it says, "Thank you for all of your ongoing support. I don't know how any of these men sleep at night, but if there's one thing I do know, it is that what's done in the dark always comes to light." Now, the importance of that first sentence is that there are letters in that that are capitalized, that are not the first letters of each word, so they shouldn't be capitalized. It's letters that are capitalized, and they spell out, "Dan did it." Now, this is very conspiracy theory shit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is true, but it's fucking weird.
Yeah.
And it's there. The email goes on to say, "Sorry, I thought it was clever. Unfortch, I will obviously not be making any comment whatsoever for obvious reasons. And unfortch, I feel as though the only way that legitimate stories can make the headlines regarding blank is if others publicly speak on his behavior. Blank was like a second father to me. But things changed after the second incident. I don't know if I will ever be able to have children or the family of my dreams. People have been picking this scab for years. I just want to be the one who finally rips it off." And it's signed, "Thank you, Amanda Bynes."
Interesting.
Which leads to, now we're going back in time, 2003. In 2003, Amanda Bynes is 17 years old, and she files a petition to be emancipated from her parents. Her entire team knows, and they keep it a secret from her parents. Her parents somehow find out, they flip out, and they fire Amanda's entire team because they essentially say, "You don't work for Amanda, you work for us." But her team came out years later and said, "Really, we weren't working for her parents." Like, yeah, technically, but not technically. Amanda was a rising star. She was about to be 18. We were working for her. We didn't really owe her parents any honesty. She ends up withdrawing the emancipation petition and begins heavily leaning on Dan Schneider. His wife Lillian, in a 2004 article, says that Amanda was spending a lot of time with us, but she never really left her parents' home. Some people now wonder, like, did Amanda want to be emancipated? Or because she was leaning so heavily on Dan, did Dan pressure her into it? Because the plan was that Amanda was going to emancipate her parents, but she wasn't going to live on her own. She was going to live with Dan Schneider. So the question is, what was really going on?
It also kind of, one of the tweets that she like got in trouble about was like accusing her dad of stuff.
So yes, which I was going to get into.
Okay, well,
so,
great.
Amanda, right before the conservatorship is filed, let me see if I can find, because I did put it in here. Hold on. Okay, yeah. So following the end of the temporary conservatorship and a 6 month stint in rehab, she goes on Twitter and she says, "My dad was verbally and physically abusive to me as a child. He called me ugly as a child and then asked me if I wanted to have sex with him. And I did not know how to respond. And I said no. And then I was forced to live with my dad, which was a total nightmare. My dad fondled himself in front of me so many times that I started recording him on my phone in hopes of catching him saying or doing something inappropriate around me so I could get him arrested and put in jail for the rest of his perverted life. My mom knows that my father was literally and physically incestuous towards his own daughter, and the fact that she never called the police on him embarrasses me to no end. So today I'm meeting with a lawyer to get a restraining order against my dad." Now, her mother came out and said, I'm heartbroken today for my husband of 47 years. Rick has never abused Amanda or other children physically or sexually. These accusations are absolutely horrible and could not be further from the truth. These allegations stem from Amanda's mental state at the moment." A day later, Amanda recants on Twitter and says, "My dad never did any of these things. The microchip in my brain made me say these things, but he's the one that ordered them to microchip me. A month later, Amanda admitted on Twitter to being diagnosed as bipolar and manic depressive. And then from there, she basically goes Twitter dark. And by March 2015, she's not tweeting at all. But a lot of people believe that she was not tweeting about Rick Bynes, her biological father, but that she was tweeting about Dan Schneider.
Dan Schneider, yeah.
Because she repeatedly referred to him in when she was a child, a teenager, and a young woman as him being a father figure. Mm-hmm. So, we don't know, but...
The theory's out there.
The theory is out there.
Do with that what you will.
The theory is out there. Everyone, all the articles that I read, all the YouTube videos that I watched, all of the alleged actors that were on the show with Amanda have come out either with their own stories of abuse. Drake Bell he hasn't said this himself, but it's believed that he was abused by Dan Schneider. There have been other people who have come out against Dan Schneider, have actually named him. And the other piece of this story is that many people also in all of this research that I did talked about Amanda Bynes' parents as being like typical stage parents who did nothing to keep her protected, mm-hmm. and like used her like a workhorse. Mm-hmm. So who knows? But that's like that. That's the story with Dan Schneider. And I know this was all over the place in a timeline, so I'm not going to end it like I would a normal episode and be like, and this is what happened. Cause we all know what happened. Amanda Bynes was put in a conservatorship, which I don't even think that's the mistake. She seems to think the conservatorship was helpful. Mm-hmm. She ended up wanting to be out of it, as of last year. And she got out of it
her successfully quickly.
Her mom supported her in filing the petition to end the conservatorship. She said that she is happy that the conservatorship is over because she's looking forward to having a mother-daughter relationship with Amanda and not a conservatee relationship with her daughter. She graduated from FITM. She is still engaged to that boyfriend that she had or has had, who she met in a treatment center. She's still sober.
She's getting her face tattoo removed.
She got it removed for that court date. Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of if she regrets it, get it removed for sure. But it is kind of a bummer that you can't just have a face tattoo and be taken seriously. But that particular face tattoo didn't look amazing.
Yeah. And she has a lot of projects coming out. She said that I read an article last week. She said she's launching a perfume in a few months. She's working with people. She wants to get back to acting. It seems like she's good. Mm-hmm. The mistake here is the way that she was exploited. And not only that, but the way that the media treated her. Mm-hmm. She's been compared a lot to Lindsay Lohan because she was kind of competing for the roles and vying for the career that Lindsay had from good girl to bad girl. Lindsay had her breakdown, but it's also interesting because it's when Lindsay's breakdown, when Lindsay Lohan's breakdown happened, Twitter wasn't a thing yet. Mm-hmm. So it was a few days before the news cycle was happening. Mm-hmm. When Amanda Bynes' breakdown was happening,
it was all reported in real time.
In real time.
And the paparazzi were getting horrific photos of her the same day that she would she was tweeting certain things. It's almost her tweets tipped the paparazzi off that today would be a day that they'd get her looking crazy.
Yeah. And just the way that, it's the Madonna horrification of these child stars. It's you can either be the Madonna and the whore. In this case, it's you can either be the goody-goody girl. The girl next door, the crazy bitch. And that's exactly what we did to Amanda Bynes. And I say we because obviously not me and you and necessarily people listening to this podcast, but as a culture, we all stood by and either fed into it or just let it happen to her. And
we were even if we were fans of hers and felt sympathetic to the crisis she was in, people were laughing at the tweets she was posting
her mugshot, just we did with Britney's, photo of her shaving her head.
Yeah.
Or Lindsay, the pictures that people still post of Lindsay crying in court.
Yeah.
It's we have a field day with destroying these girls
and gleefully participating in and even though it's just a joke and we and listen, I'm guilty of this. I've definitely, I like one of my cover photos on Facebook was all of Lindsay's mugshots like next to each other.
Yeah.
But like the more we like kind of continue to use those images and cycle through those images, the more we're reinforcing the idea that it's like funny and entertainment when women are having like genuine mental health crises, and not even just mental health crises, but a crisis in general of like not having the proper support systems around.
Yeah.
The thing that Amanda, Lindsay, and Brittany all have in common is that they had families that were exploiting them.
Yep.
And nobody was there to help them for when like push came to shove, and they were, you know, maybe all three of them maybe made decisions that we could categorize as mistakes.
Yeah.
But the things that like led to those decisions, or the things that like the circumstances that surrounded those decisions, are like way more important and impactful in my opinion than the things that like Amanda tweeted, or the things that like Lindsay has been quoted as saying.
Yeah.
Or the umbrella that Brittany tried to hit a paparazzi with,
and they were just so fucking young. Like Amanda was the oldest out of all of them when this was going down, you know. She was 25 when like the breakdown per se started happening, but it's like that's so young. Like we're, you know, you're 26, I'm 27. Like, with that amount of like pressure on you, like the, it's just like that makes me even sadder that like nobody, it's like they weren't women, they were girls. Like, it's just cuckoo bananas. And I hope she gets back to acting. She said in this article in 2018 that she wants to. She hasn't talked about it since. But like, guys, give Amanda Bynes
her flowers.
She's so
talented.
So talented. Like, truly a comedic genius. And maybe that's not what she wants anymore. Maybe she's going to say fuck off and be like a fashion marketing girl and be behind the scenes.
Yeah,
and
maybe she's going to pull an Olsen twins, and that's fine
and
too.
Whatever you want to do, Amanda, I support that.
Yeah.
Like, she is like, I remember being very, 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 very sad when this happened and was happening, because she was like such an icon to me and my like little 12-year-old mind, and as a little kid too. So I've always felt like very close to her in that parasocial way.
I mean, same. She was absolutely like my favorite actress. Like,
yeah,
her and like Hilary Duff.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah.
It was them for me.
Yeah. And Lindsay too, but like in a little bit of a, like, I didn't relate to Lindsay in the same way. I loved her, but like I was a silly, weird kid, and like Amanda was just the, like, she was the girl for those of us who were like funny weirdos.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to do sources before I forget, but one article is Break the Internet, Amanda Please on papermag.com. Another one is a Variety article called Young, Famous, and Control. Another one is a complex.com article called The Timeline of Amanda Bynes' Breakdown. Another one is insider.com timeline of her career. And then the main source would be the YouTube video that I watched. And the YouTuber is called Sloan. It's S-L-O-4-N-E.
I've also watched that video.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very good video, which then led me to that other podcaster. But I didn't like go on his website. So, but yeah. So those are my sources.
Moral of the story.
Moral of the story. I feel like we just kind of said it.
Yeah, I mean, justice for Amanda. Moral of the story is obviously there needs to be more protection and accountability for what happens behind the scenes with child stars. I mean, like, in a perfect world, Jeanette McCurdy has said this like multiple times, like, in a perfect world, children don't work in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
But that's never going to happen. We like having kids in the stories that we tell. And so if that's going to be the case, you know, how many fucking kids does this need to happen to?
Like, it's been happening since child stars were a thing, like as early as like the 20s. Like,
yeah,
the,
no, I mean,
go look at the original Little Rascals from the 1920s and the way all of their lives ended. It's like, it's just a tale as old as time.
Yeah. Yeah. And like,
and our fascination with like, where are they now? Like, we love reading those articles of like, ooh, that former Brady Bunch star is like fucked up in the head now. Like, it's like, why do we love these Why do we love that?
There's an obsession with like building people up just to tear them down.
And then building them, you know, and then we love to like celebrate
and
them.
And we love their redemption. It's like redemption from the breakdown that we caused.
That we caused. It's sick.
I mean, I have like a lot of respect for how Britney continues to address the public in a like, I don't trust you motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Just because you're rooting for me right now doesn't mean that that didn't all just happen to me and yeah. you didn't give a shit. It was entertainment to you.
Yeah.
And you know, there's like, she like shouts out her like Free Britney fans yeah. because I think those are people who like the majority of the like true Free Britney people never yeah. left her side, no. even during the 2007 stuff. But like, I do appreciate that, like, she has not let up on that. She doesn't, like, now feel, like, safe in the public eye. Like, yeah. it's what caused all of the problems in her life. And it's, like, just because a lot of the problems have been alleviated doesn't mean that that's not still a problem and that it's not still a threat.
Yeah. And I hope, you know, I don't know how Amanda feels about the it's a much smaller movement and it's not one now, obviously, because the conservatorship is over, but it's been there. But I wonder how she feels about her fans, specifically like the Free Amanda movement, because that's like one niche dedicated group of people. I've been following them on Twitter for a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I don't know. Thank God for moral of the story is thank God for conspiracy theorist YouTubers because they change.
Well, some of them.
Some of them change the course of lots of these people's lives.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
you know, not all of them are quacks.
Yeah.
Some of them are actually right. And I hope more come, you know, I would like to see more come out about Dan Schneider because he's talking about how he's ready to get back to work.
Ugh. My God. Well,
and, you know, it's this YouTuber Sloan said, like, it's weird that everything that happened to Harvey Weinstein, none of it has happened to Dan Schneider. Mm-hmm. It's like, it seems like a lot of these child actors are afraid.
Yeah.
To come out. And I don't blame them. But I hope you do come out because you yeah. have people who support you.
It'd be really interesting to hear what, like, Ariana Grande has to say.
Yeah. I wonder why she's never, you know, she's such a star.
Because she's, like, the one person that, like...
It's not going to impact her career.
It wouldn't impact her career.
But, you know, I've watched videos of her, too, kind of, like, running away from Dan Schneider on the set of Victorious. And
yeah.
her, like, laughing about it. But at that age, that's, like, how you deal with being uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She never talks about Nickelodeon.
Yeah, no, not at all.
It's, like, very much, like, you know, she treats it like it's what kind of got her started, and that's it. So I'm curious. But also, it's, like, you know, you don't need to be an activist because you went through something traumatic. So I don't necessarily...
No, totally. I don't think it's, like, her responsibility
yeah,
or anything.
I don't think that you do
but
that, yeah.
It would be just interesting... to see what kind of impact it would make.
I'm sure Jeanette McCurdy, well, I'm not sure, but I mean, this memoir, I'm Glad My Mom Is Dead, is dropping soon. I bet she's going to have some piping hot shit to say about Dan Schneider.
Yeah.
Maybe, it, you know, again, we'll not be using his name because she doesn't want to get sued, but who knows? I'll
who
definitely be reading
knows?
It.
Yeah, I mean, it's same. I actually saw Amanda Bynes in 2019. Oh. I walked by her. She was walking with a friend near the Santa Monica Pier oh. in Los Angeles. And it was like she looked really good. She looked like healthy and good. But it, like I knew it was her. She had the like, I mean, it was just definitely Amanda Bynes.
Yeah.
And it was... really interesting to like, you know, I did not feel inclined at all to like take out my phone and record her or ask for a photo or anything. It was just like really nice to see that she was like able to take a walk with a friend and yeah. be recognizably Amanda Bynes, but like no one was taking photos of her. She was wearing sunglasses, you know, she's being a little bit down yeah. low, but like, yeah, I just remember being like pretty struck by I had not really seen any updates about her or like heard about her for a while, and it was just nice to see that she was just like clearly just like having a nice day with a friend
yeah.
out in LA, and it also was like very humanizing to see like to actually see her in real life,
yeah,
because I think she's just like, you know, she was an idol of mine as a kid. She was a headline when I was a teenager. She's like this mysterious figure where we don't know, like, is she okay? Like, what's yeah. she going to do next? And, you know, just like watching her, like, just walk with a friend on the same beach that I was on. I was like, you know, it's none of my business how she's doing, and it's none of my business where she is mentally, but I'm glad she's able to, like...
Aries icon.
True. Aries bipolar icon.
Aries, Aquarius, Gemini. We would definitely be
best
friends.
Oh my God, we would vibe so hard with Amanda Bynes. Amanda, I mean, Amanda, come on the pod.
We love you.
We love you. And I wish, I understand how you feel about She's the Man. But I hope that you one day come around to loving it as much as we do.
Yeah, and I hope you know the impact that it had on so many trans people.
Yeah, the impact that it had on queer and trans youth. I mean, I know that, like, now if you watch it, it comes off as, like, really transphobic and homophobic and sexist. Yeah. But it's, like, it's almost as if the transphobia, homophobia, and sexism all cancel each other out. Yeah. Yeah. Because, like, it was, like, the way that it was, like, kind of representation of, like, gender divergence, yeah, and of, like, queerness, because, like, Channing Tatum's character, like, kind of falls in love with her before he knows, yeah, that she's a girl.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, like,
bisexual kid.
And also, like, the blonde girl in the movie falls in love with her, yeah, as a boy. Uh-huh. And, like, but we know that she's a girl. And, mm-hmm, so there's, like, gayness there a little bit, mm-hmm, too. And it's just, you know, she, like, binds her chest, and that's, like, just a very, like, trans masculine, like, representation moment, even if it's for the sake of, like, this, like, you know, hijinks that's going on in the movie.
Yeah.
I fucking love that movie.
I do too. It's and iconic.
I forgive it for its slight gender essentialism at the end, where they prove their genders by exposing their underage genitalia.
I do too. I'm gonna have to watch the movie tonight that she should have gotten an Oscar for, which is What a Girl Wants.
Ugh. Give Amanda Bynes her flowers.
Give her her flowers.
And give us your flowers, yes, in the form of money on our Patreon.
Yes, please subscribe to our Patreon. And if you don't want to, support us on Anchor instead.
Support us on Anchor instead. Just,
or do both.
Tell your friends, tell your rich friends to send us money.
yes.
We work hard and we'd love it. Also, our Patreon episodes are fun. This week, we talk about, you know, love life updates. We talk about our relationship with drugs.
Yes.
We talk about what we would save in a fire.
Yes.
And it's a grand old time.
It is.
Leave us a review.
Leave us a review.
Write in your mistakes.
Write in your mistakes.
At bestmistakespod@gmail.com.
And
test your holes.
Test your drugs.
And kiss your friends on the mouth.
And fuck Dan Schneider.